Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com and go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, the Police Code of Silence. Police are assumed to be honest and trustworthy, among other things. Can we trust police who pledge to protect officers who break the law, intimidate, and violate citizens, etc.? Are we safe interacting with them in or outside of the courtroom? Your safety, freedom, and your life may depend on how honest and trustworthy a police officer is. The code of silence. Protecting offending officers at almost all costs. First, I would like to thank all police officers who perform their duty in a professional, ethical, and honorable manner. From PT, it appears that officers of the law have a culture that dictates that police cover the behavior of their fellow officers, even if they are wrong, violating the law, intimidating, stealing, endangering, assaulting, and murdering someone. This culture perpetuates behavior that is in violation of the law and the duties of the police officer, places police officers and civilians at risk. It places the police officer above the law. We do not want the community to lose respect for the police officer, and we do not want the police officers to be disrespect the members of the community and those who interact in the community. So I'm going to share some information. First, we're going to start with black residents targeted for harassment by police, says the U.S. Justice Department, a report. This is posted by CBS News on March 4th, 2015. A U.S. Justice Department issued a report about the Ferguson, Missouri Police Force on Wednesday, accusing it of engaging in practices that are discriminatory and unconstitutional. The department actually issued two reports, one that said it won't prosecute a former Ferguson police officer in a shooting death of an unarmed black 18-year-old. However, another report looked into the police department itself. It found that the shooting occurred in an environment of systemic mistreatment of blacks in which officials swapped racist emails and jokes without punishment and black residents were disproportionately stopped and searched, fined for petty offenses, and subjected to excessive police force. Inside Internal Affairs says, what is the cause of the code of silence by Mr. John Hine and John Franklin, 9/22/16? Lessons from Chicago. In October 2014, Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke shot and killed Laquan McDonald, irate, angry teenager, reportedly under the influence of illegal drugs while carrying a knife. Van Dyke and other on-scene officers filed reports indicating McDonald was a threat to him. A Chicago police detective who conducted an official investigation of the shooting filed reports justifying the good shoot. The report was approved by several supervisors up the chain of command, from a sergeant through a lieutenant to a commander. This shooting was controversial from the beginning for many reasons. The victim was shot by one officer 16 times. A dash cam video of the shooting was withheld for over a year during the re-election campaign of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. After community outcry and a federal court order, the video was released. It showed a different story than what was told by on-scene officers. The video appeared to show many of the shots were fired while the victim, Laquan, was lying on the ground, facing away from Van Dyke. No other police officer on the scene fired a shot. The video also seemed to contradict, not support, officers' reports that McDonald lunged threateningly in the officer's direction. Okay, so we got a video here that's in conflict video with what the officers actually said that happened. So he contradicted that McDonald had lunged threatening in the officer's direction. Very important, because the report was quite different. The county prosecutor waited over 1 year to take any action. Chicago police superintendent was fired for what appeared to be political maneuvers by others over whom McCarthy had no control. In addition, because of this case and other suspected violations, the U.S. Department of Justice is currently investigating whether Chicago police have persistently violated the rights of citizens. Is this an isolated event, or one of two or three, or is that the culture there? Anyway, what do you guys think? After community outcry, the federal video was released. So, the two most important things that need constant attention and vigilance while enforcing the law and maintaining order is to protect yourself and your partner. But in some circumstances, your own reputation is very important for a police officer to protect his reputation as a good man, a good woman, a good person, a fair person, an honest person. Okay? Livelihood, protect your livelihood, your family welfare become more important than your partner's well-being. Those things should be more important than covering your partner's behind. A good reputation can be difficult to develop, but extremely easy to lose. So, Mr. Hine is an instructor of criminal justice for American public university system and a retired executive of the former U.S. Customs Service. He served 35 years in civilian and military security and law enforcement agencies. So, that's just a little bit about who he is. So, this is from the Police Code of Silence Facts Bill. Legal Officers Section, Annual Conference, International Association of Chiefs of Police, by Neil Troutman, Director of National Institute Director of the National Institute of Ethics. The National Institute of Ethics has concluded the most extensive research ever conducted on the police code of silence between February 1999 and June 2000. 3,714 officers and academy recruits from 42 different states were asked to participate in the study by the Institute. One aspect of research determined the views of academy recruits, while the other identified officers who had taken part in the code of silence. So, then asked why and how it occurred. These findings marked the first time law enforcement has ever been able to learn the truth about this crucial problem. So they're identifying the code of silence as a problem. The significance of this knowledge is that if we can learn how to effectively control the code of silence, serious corruption cannot exist because many people become aware of scandal and it expands. Facts about academy recruits. 25 basic law enforcement academies from 16 states took part in the research by administrating and collecting 1,016 confidential questionnaires completed by the academy recruits. The findings included that 79% said that law enforcement code of silence exists and is fairly common throughout the nation. 52% said that the fact that a code of silence exists doesn't really bother them. 24% said the code of silence is more justified when excessive force involves a citizen who's abusive. So I guess if you're running your mouth, and get your head rung, your bell rung by the police a little, a couple of times more than you probably should, code of silence might be more justified. 46% said they would not tell on another officer for having sex on duty. Now, you're not supposed to have sex on duty, number one. You're in a city vehicle, and you definitely shouldn't be forcing anybody to have sex. But we're going to go on. 23% said they wouldn't tell on another cop for regularly smoking marijuana off duty. Facts about current officers. The sampling of current officers was comprised of 2,698 full-time officers from 21 different states. A total of 1,116 of the 2,657 officers asked to complete a confidential questionnaire did so. This equates to a response rate of 42%. See that? Only 42% even wanted to fill out this confidential questionnaire. An additional 41 officers provided confidential interviews. The following facts were revealed. In response to, please describe the first time you witnessed misconduct by another employee but took no action. 46%, 532 advised they had witnessed misconduct by another employee. No action, but concealed what they knew. In response to the question, at the time the incident occurred, what did you think would happen if you revealed what had taken place? The five reasons listed most were, I would be ostracized. That means you would be set aside. Nobody would talk to you. Nobody would like you. 177 times, the officer who committed the misconduct would be disciplined or fired 88 times. It would be fired. I would be fired from my job 73 times, I would say. I would be blackballed, which is close to being ostracized, 59 times. The administration would not do anything even if I reported it. What times, that was said. So 73%. Of individuals pursuing pressuring officers to keep quiet about the misconduct were leaders. So 73% of individuals pressuring officers to keep quiet, covering up, right, misconduct were leaders. 8%, 40 of the 509 officers who admitted to intentionally withholding the information about officer misconduct were upper administrators, the upper administrators of the average American police department comprises only 5% of the agency. Only 5%, that still doesn't make a difference because that's the higher up you go, that's the more power you have behind you. So the average age of an officer who covered up an incident first time was 31.4 years of age. The average age years of experience when they first took part of the code of silence was 8.2 years. I want to stop and just remind the callers, if you want to speak, please press the number 1 and I'll get to you. So you need to press 1 and I'll, you know, put you on the air. So 449 of the 532 officers were male, while 74 were female. So it sounds like females are less, based on this survey, were less, these females interviewed were less liable to not to report misconduct based on a survey. Who knows what somebody actually does? So of the 532 who confessed they had participated in the code of silence, 252 were pressured to keep quiet by officers who committed the misconduct, and 118 felt pressure from uninvolved officers. So the remaining 162 officers advised they covered up the incident even though they were not pressured. So you got pressure coming for officers to do that. And pressure could be in the form of many things, threats, you know, about your job, and, you know, like I said, being ostracized. There could be a whole lot of things. Getting support when you need it. When you get that call, people slow to come, put that coffee down, that donut, that hoagie down, or, you know, wherever they might be at. You know, excessive use of force was the most frequent situation over which the code of silence occurs, with 217, where excessive use of force circumstances. The 5 most frequently offered solutions for controlling the code of silence from the 532 officers who confessed to taking part in it were conduct good ethics training. So police officers need better training. That was 46 times that was listed. More consistent accountability listed 20 times. Ensure open communication between officers and leaders listed 16 times. Provide an anonymous reporting system 14 times. And protect whistleblowers listed 10 times. So these are police officers talking about needing protection from police officers. So that right there shows you there's a problem. You need to protect the police officers from other police officers. You know, that's not good. The police code of silence. So, in conclusion, they came to, well, I guess you probably got this part, the police code of silence exists. Some form of code of silence will develop among officers in virtually any agency. The American criminal justice system, and in particular law enforcement, has been negligent by not attempting to resolve the negative impact of the code. They're saying that the police code of silence has a negative impact. The code of silence breeds, supports, and nourishes other forms of unethical action. Because the code is an essentially natural occurrence, attempts to stop it altogether will be futile. Sometimes these people have a natural inclination to protect their friends or their partners. So they cover things up. And that could be whether you're a police officer or not. The code of silence in law enforcement is more dominant and influential than most other vocations or professions. So it is virtually impossible for law enforcement agency to effectively determine how extensively the code of silence exists within its own organization. Well, that goes back to the communication and having open communication, which they don't, because you're in fear of being ostracized and who knows whatever somebody might do to you on the police force. I mean, after all, they all carry guns, and you depend on them to support you in doing your work if you're a police officer. So that could put you in a very scary situation right there. I think, you know, it's virtually it is now impossible to identify the specific assignments and units that are most at risk to the harmful aspects of the code of silence. Whistleblowers are generally not supported by the administration of law enforcement agencies. That means this runs deep. This ain't just a beat cop. This goes all the way up. So it's running deep. It's not, it's high. You know, deep, high, but you want to see it. Wide. You know, this is just not, it's not a beat cop thing. This is a culture. The use of state-of-the-art ethical dilemmas simulation training can be an effective way to prevent the code's injurious ramifications. I hope that I could do that, you know, because it's hard to change what a man is, what a person is inside by giving them training. A lot of people can take, I mean, the police, I'm sure, go to school, they have training, and they're trained at how to handle certain situations, and some guys choose not to handle it that way. So, the code of silence among administrators, although better camouflaged and less well known, is more destructive than when non-ranking personnel do the same thing. So just as I'm saying, the deeper this thing goes, or the higher up it goes, the more damaging it is. If administrators do not role model the moral courage to openly acknowledge and address misconduct when it occurs, it is much less likely that others will. So if the leaders aren't advocating a code of conduct, ethical conduct, which does not support the police code of silence, if your boss is telling you to cover something up, what are you going to do? Or if your boss is okay with you covering it up, you don't want to get in trouble, you don't want your friend to get in trouble, or you don't want another police officer to get in trouble, whatever your reason for that is, you know? It should not be a priority for law enforcement or any other professional to mold a culture of whistleblowers. So that means that, you know, you got these guys coming from, I mean, I guess somebody might have that idea already before they even get on the police force. But, you know, you come from training, you come onto the field, those guys coming, those new recruits coming in, you do not want them to become people who are, in this case, really unethical, because the code of silence in the terms of covering up the behavior of a police officer was violating the law. That's unethical. So that's not what you want a police officer to do, because you're saying that it's okay for the police to break the law, but not other people to break the law. So, you know, that's a double standard right there. And I think that a lot of people can see that. Establishing and perpetuating a culture that constantly analyzes to whom or where loyalties of workers are committed must become a widespread high priority for administrators. So now they're going to the top, because I guess they're saying that, you know, this stuff slows down. It makes me wonder if this whole code of silence came from the top. The code of silence typically conceals serious law enforcement misconduct for years before the corruption is revealed. Some officers who participate in the code of silence rationalize their behavior by convincing themselves that what they're doing is not actually hurting someone, while others intentionally replace the facts with a self-serving version because it is emotionally painful to admit the truth. So we have denial, denial, denial. The majority of officers who have been in law enforcement for several years have directly participated in the code of silence. The code of silence is prompted by excessive use of force incident more than for any other specific circumstance. People outside of police organizations reveal the misconduct within an agency more often than it is divulged from employees. And if this list is long, the code of silence usually occurs within cultures created by the role modeling of leaders. So, see, they're saying it's coming from the top. The us versus them mentality is usually present within the minds of those who participate. The code of silence and the us versus them phenomenon often bond together. So if it's us against them, then the code of silence is nothing to put down a code of silence, because that is your enemy. If you're against somebody, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of scary if the police have that attitude, us against them. The code of silence, the belief that rookie officers across the nation are routinely told that one of the most basic rules they must abide by is that they can never rat out another officer. You get that? Especially by testifying against them. It's untrue. Okay? So they're saying that's not true. And they're not saying it's never happened, but they're saying it's not true across the nation. A routine told that's a basic rule. When desired, values are not sincerely embraced and role modeled by the leaders again within the organization, the code of silence is more likely to occur. Here we go. The leaders. And I think you could take that all the way up to the mayor's office, whoever is in charge of the police, the commissioner and the mayor, because they all need to be hold people responsible who are under their charge, the mayor and the police commissioner, commanders, lieutenants, captains, sergeants, however it goes. It's like the military, so, you know, everybody need to, they need to raise the bar. That's what I'm hearing here from this survey, this questionnaire. It seems like the bar needs to be raised, even though there shouldn't be a bar that needs to be raised in this situation because of the role that police officers play in the community, or supposed role they play in the community. So, although structured role modeling will probably become the most effective corrective tool for preventing the code of silence, it will be necessary to begin the process of making change through training. Okay? That's another shout out for training. A culture which acts as fertile ground for the destructive features of the code of silence to grow. Is one that promotes loyalty to people over integrity. So, loyalty to police officers over integrity of what you're actually doing in the community. So, if I'm taking a stack of 100 from a drug dealer, loyalty, a police officer's loyalty to me, he won't tell that. So he might not take it because that's not who he is, but he's not going to tell I took it. So we've taken, whether it was 5,000, we've taken 4,000 at the catch. I pocket 1,000 myself. So my partners won't say a thing. Field training officers have the ability to alter the code of silence in a positive fashion if their commitment to do so is obtained. Many police officers feel a great sense of alienation. This often acts as a catalyst for officers to rationalize that keeping part of the code of silence is not particularly wrong. So you don't want your fellow officers to hate you. You know, not to sit down and have coffee with you, or you know, want to talk to you, or, you know, just be cordial with you or anything like that. So you'd be alienated. So I don't know if you guys remember, there was a story about a police officer by the name of Serpico in New York. I think that was in the '60s. Basically worked on a drug unit. And he didn't go with the program. He didn't, it's called a silence. He broke it. And for that, he was ostracized, alienated. They turned their nose up to him. And, you know, one day, they just failed to come to his aid. And he was caught, in the movie, he was caught in the doorway. And suspect shot him in the face. I think he lost his hearing and something like that. Anyway, this Serpico had to leave New York. This is a white officer. I think he worked in a drug detail. So that's how deep this thing is. So, you know, it's real. And they made a movie about it a long time ago. But if you knew it existed then, why does it still exist now? Because that was like Serpico. I think it was the 60s or the 70s that movie came out. Al Pacino played Serpico. If you had an idea about this code of silence, you know, if you had a question, like, well, come on, why is anybody doing anything about it if it's not good for it? Is everybody corrupt in the police department, or are they afraid? You know, what's going on? Corruption, fear, the police are fearful of police officers? We're in bad shape. We're in trouble if that's the case, and it appears to be the case with some people. So one of the most powerful root causes of officers throughout the nation participating in the code of silence is that they deeply believe they have been victimized by their own workplace. So cop feels he's the victim. Police officer. So I guess that might be, I don't know, maybe the community, you know, not treating him like he's a human being. I don't know. That's interesting right there, because maybe some aggressive individuals in the community towards a police officer, and he feels he's a victim in his workplace. He's at risk. And I'm not saying that police officers aren't at risk. I think that's the nature of the job, though. That's like a soldier saying, you know, saying, I'm at risk here. There are people doing things to me. You know, you're a soldier. That's why you have a gun on your side. That's why you have, you know, all these other baton and all these weapons, because you have a potentially dangerous job. But you're not supposed to abuse that power. So I think they have a saying from a Spider-Man movie, power comes great responsibility, something like that. So I think we all need to keep that in mind. Police officers, administrators, politicians, you know, civilians, you know, we have great power. We don't abuse it. Leaders themselves lie at the core of both the cause and solution of corruption and the code of silence. This, I don't know, the research says that if you have all this information, but it sounds like it's very hard to, even knowing this, it's very hard to, you know, uproot the code of silence. The rotten apple theory that some administrators propose as the cause of their downfall has frequently been nothing more than a self-serving, superficial facade intended to draw attention away from their own failures. Historically, administrators have not had the courage to acknowledge they have integrity needs. And, you know, that's kind of crazy with some of the stuff that we read about and see happening in these communities in the United States. You don't have to be a genius to know that there are some integrity issues with the police officers. So, an administrative indifference toward the code of silence exists. The widespread indifference toward integrity issues by administrators serves as the initial breeding ground for the more serious consequences, such as the negative aspects of the code. The intentional ignoring of the code of silence by leaders is primarily caused by two problems: a lack of knowledge and self-centeredness. So that's meanness. And we all know that any or most narcissistic attitudes are not good for most people. And this list is so long. I'm going to skip some of this stuff. I'm just going to some other points of record. And Chicago seems to have a very, very serious problem. Nothing happens to the police. Forced confessions go unpunished in Chicago. The record, which includes service requests on hundreds of Chicago police vehicles, show that officers have routinely been involved in intentional destruction and sabotage of body-worn microphones that sync with dashboard cameras videos. So that's the evidence. That's the visual evidence that the police have from the body cam and dashboard cam. But somehow, these things are mysteriously going out of whack. After the video of Laquan McDonald's shooting was released in November, it was discovered that as much as 80% of the department's dash cam footage was missing audio. This was determined to be due to technical failure, human error, or in some cases, according to police spokesman Anthony Golalamini, I can't say his name, I'm sorry I messed your name up, brother. The intentional destruction. So they're saying that police officers are intentionally destroying evidence because your dash cam is providing evidence of your interaction with the suspect, community, whatever. So if you destroy that as a police officer, you're intentionally destroying evidence. So that's like obstruction of justice anyway. William Calloway, a Chicago activist who was instrumental in obtaining the release of the Laquan McDonald footage, said the logs proved to be premeditated effort by officers to avoid transparency. They are intentionally sabotaging this video equipment because, in their mind, they're going to do something wrong or reckless when they're outside on the beat. So I don't need a witness, but I'm carrying one over my shoulder. So I need to make sure this thing ain't working. So apparently that's happening so much that somebody's taking a look at it. He added that he was absolutely not shocked or surprised about it at all. The record shows that the dash cam in Van Dyke's vehicle was repaired on June 17, 2014. 3 months after it was reported broken. The next day, the system was reported broken again. What technicians call intentional damage was not repaired until October 8, 2014. On October 20th, the dash cam and one and another car recorded Van Dyke's fatal shooting of McDonald. The next month, technicians noted the missing audio in the car's footage and suggested it is apparent from the upload videos that personnel have failed to sync the mics. So that's part of the code of silence to cover up wrongdoing. So from the Philadelphia Tribune, since the late 2015, the public has known that police who witnessed the fatal shooting of Laquan McDonald described the scene starkly different than the one that later emerged on video of a white officer pumping 16 bullets into a black teenager. The announcement that the three officers had been charged with lying about that night raises questions about why it took so long to bring charges and underscores how tough it is to battle the code of silence long associated with the Chicago Police Department and other law enforcement agencies across the country. Even though police brass had seen this video, knew what was on it, each of the reports of these officers was approved all the way up the chain of command. Remember? This said Craig Ferdinand, a University of Chicago law professor who has studied the department, and was part of the legal team that fought the city over its refusal to release the video. So That's a big problem because we have people in administration, all through the police department and the city, who basically are supporting the code of silence, reading the code of silence in Chicago. The officers who knew there was a video, he said, knew they could lie because the CPD has allowed that for far too long. So that's very important to pay attention to because you know you're on tape. And you also know that you can lie about what's on tape because the Chicago Police Department is going to handle that. It was going to make that disappear or whatever. That's deep right there. Because that's like saying you give somebody a green card to do what they want to do. Go do what you want to do. Not until November 2015, more than a year after October of 20, 2014 shooting, and well after that city agreed to pay McDonald's family $5 million to avoid a lawsuit, did the city release the video. Officials acted only after the judge ordered them to do so. Took a court order. This is very serious. So now, are police administrators saying it's better to have these people on the street? This type of person carrying a gun, stopping people, interacting with people who have problems, who are maybe angry, who may have some mental health issues, who may be intoxicated, who may have a weapon in their hand across the street. I said, well, we have a caller. Caller? Oh, 036. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello? All
I have
right,
an
how you doing?
idea as to
Welcome.
how to get clean that system up.
You got an idea how to clean it up?
Yeah, well, at least the part about the videos anyway. Not the
Oh, okay.
entire thing. I guess the videos should help clear up the system. But when they have a change of shift, they have an inspection of everybody's equipment and vehicles and everything like that. So I think they ought to give them an incentive to keep their equipment, safe and operational. And since they already come to the conclusion that everyone is intentionally, destroying these listening devices and everything like that, recording devices, they should give them fines for that. You know what I mean? You touch their money, I think they're going to start out making sure their equipment is working.
Okay, well, you know
And I
that
think eventually.
it's beneficial to have the equipment not working if you're going to do something that you don't need the equipment to record.
Right. So I'm saying when everybody comes on duty, they need to have an inspection. You got to pass
I
in order
got
for you to
you.
pass inspection. You know what I mean? Your equipment got to be working. If it's not working, then you get a fine for this, destroying your property, for destroying your
Right,
equipment.
but
Maybe the first
what
time,
I'm saying is,
maybe the first. Oh, go ahead.
hello? I'll say what I'm saying is, if I'm gonna knock somebody in the head on the street, right? I shoot somebody who's not really coming at me. I'd rather take a fine than have that recorded or supported by a recording. If I'm corrupt, if I'm a
Right.
police
What I'm
officer.
saying is. What I'm saying is these guys got limited in how much they can take of that. They can't just be giving away $1,000 to $2,000 every time they want to knock somebody in the head. I think that would kind of slow that type of thing down. They can't afford that.
Okay. All right.
Or
So
whatever
we give them a
it is,
stiff fine. You're gonna give them a stiff fine for the damaging it on equipment.
Right.
Okay.
First
That's
time
something. That's better
it's an
than nothing.
accident. But the second time it gets kind of, second or third time it gets kind of steep, a grand or
Right.
two or something like that. Yeah, that's
Right.
kind of incidental, your equipment is damaged, twice in within 2 weeks. Every week your equipment is jacked up. No, you $2,000
Right. And you're just
coming out of
happen to
your
jack
check.
somebody up. Every time you jack
Yeah.
somebody up, your equipment is jacked up. That's a
Right.
correlation right there. That's a good, yeah, that's, you know what? That's something right there because you correlate it with incident or arrest or something like that. Yeah. That's right. Something. Okay.
Right. That's
Is that
just
it?
my idea.
Okay, thank you.
I think eventually those recording devices will be a little more effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they probably will. I think that might do something. Okay. Is that it?
That's pretty much it.
Okay, thank you very much. 6144, welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hello?
Hello? Yes, sir.
Hello? Hey, how
yes.
you doing, Carlton?
How you doing, Kenny?
How you doing? Hey,
I'm all right, brother.
Right.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Is your guest still there?
I don't know. Hugh?
Yes, I'm still here.
Hey, still there?
Oh, I just want to know, well, this is what I always want to know. You know, and this got something to do with the police wall of silence. And I think the police wall of silence, you know, police wall of silence have been around for since we had police departments, and I think that I think that has to, it's something that has to be done internally. And I mean, if you come in the system. And you come in the system at, let's say, 19, 20 years old, you know, 21 years of age. I mean, you go grow up in that system, and it just handed down generationally. And I think I think it had to be a really attitudinal change among police officers as an institution, as a system. But that's all I got to say about the police wall of silence. I don't think, as a community, we can't do anything about the police wall of silence. Because any time a police officer could shoot down a man in front of a camera and just get death duty and still get off free in the court of law, and no other police officers, I have never, and maybe had, but I had never heard of a police officer say to another police officer, "You're wrong for shooting down this man. He did it. He's guilty." You know, everybody just keep quiet and just ride it out until the jury finds him not guilty of shooting down an unarmed black man.
Well,
now with that,
they actually, in Chicago, they wrote a report to support what the police officer said.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's crazy.
And I'm talking about the brother that just left, you know, he said that they just got off the phone. He said that the cameras will cut it down and stuff. They got dash cams. They got some uniforms got cameras.
Right. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. So I think it's just business as usual. But I want to ask your guest, you know, why is there such tension? I mean, the tension just didn't start 3 years ago, or Trayvon Martin or anything. The tension between the black community and law enforcement had been going on since I was a kid. Before I was a kid. I mean, before, ever since I can remember. So I never could understand. They have on it, especially NYPD, of protect and serve, professionalism, all that. But yet, still, I have heard police officers call some citizens, black citizens, some of the vile names I have heard of. And a lot of these police officers were from other cultures. So I just want to know, how come there always been tension between the black community and law enforcement?
Oh, well, you might have answered partly. I would say that, but, you know, I don't even know. You're asking the caller. So you want to reply, Q?
Oh, that's a question for me?
Yeah, he asked you a question.
I don't know why they have that thing against our community. I think that goes back to some of the other broadcasts we had about the whole slave thing, the white supremacy thing. and the way people are, you know, taught to, how people are taught to react towards black people, you know. All these negative images and everything like that, they kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, I guess. It's like we, you know, they feel threatened or something like that, unnecessarily.
Yeah, that's probably a part of it, and that's black folks are a very vulnerable population in this country. So
yeah.
It's not a lot of people running to say, oh, what you did, what happened, what, you know, it's like, you know, kill somebody and okay, on to the next one, kill another one. Oh, okay, you know. I mean, there are people protesting, and there are some people talking about it, but we've been a very vulnerable population here. We have another caller on. Oh, you guys, hold on. We got somebody on 4296. We've been very vulnerable, so you can do almost what you want to do to a black person here or a poor person. Caller, welcome to Provocative Thought, 4296.
What's up, caller? This is June.
Hey, how you doing, June?
My, the problem is that they do whatever they want to do to the black community, and then there's no accountability. And that's one of the problems. I mean, if you can treat me any way you want to treat me and you're not going to be held accountable for it, hey, there's always going to be some tension between me and you. In that case,
right.
What the police department need, they need somebody outside of the police department. They need a community advisory, somebody that will hold old guys accountable. It's like the other caller said, that it's a generational thing. Fathers, grandfathers, uncles, cousins, you know. Been police officers forever. And those guys not going against each other, man, irregardless. I mean, they didn't turn criminal. They allow criminal activity to exist every day because it's obstruction of justice. They see something and they allow it to go on without saying something. They participate in it by keeping their mouth closed and not saying nothing. That's criminal.
Right.
In order to, you know what,
right.
Man, I had an incident one time. Well, my son had a little incident and the police came. And I had came up, was explaining to the officer that was my son and I was his father and I wanted to know what was going on. And for no reason at all, he went off on me and he was real disrespectful and saying all kind of derogatory stuff towards me. So the sergeant was out there. So I said, you see how he's talking to me? I said, I wasn't disrespectful to him. And I mean, there's no reason for him to talk to me like that. And
right.
I said, look, he's a human being just like me, man. He's not God. He's just a human. So now the sergeant's talking about, now you offending me. I said, well, because I said, he's not God? He got offended by it. So what I finally wound up doing was, I had went on and filed a complaint against the officer, and they had a little hearing in the district with the lieutenant. And guess what? Nothing come about. They didn't find nothing wrong with that. And that's because they police each other. And as long as they do
that's
that,
right.
You're never going to get justice. They're not going
right.
to go against each other. They're
right.
not going to do nothing. You know, they stick together regardless. So, I mean, if they sworn in to uphold the law, I mean, they violate that law every day. They total crime. And they know there's no accountability. And if you're looking for them to police each other, and they've been doing that forever. And that's why we at where we at right now. That's all I want to say on that matter.
Okay. You're fading, June.
David.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. There's no, I mean, that's like the fox minding the chicken coop, you know. So, I mean, you can't depend on the fox not to destroy the eggs, right? He's going to do what he do.
That's right.
So we have two more callers. Let me pick up on some of these on another caller. 8091. Welcome to Provocative Talk.
Yes. Good evening. This is Jay.
Jay, how you doing?
Hi, King. How are you?
All right.
Good. Well, you know, I think you know we're at the point now where African Americans really have to make a decision. This is a new world order decision to eliminate. eliminate African Americans from this country. And there is no rationalizing anything that they're doing. They're on a mission. And the same way they did the Native Americans, where they systematically murdered, slaughtered, and removed them from their own land. They have this intention. It's in every kind of way of existence. And so how do you stop from being annihilated from a nation? Because we can no longer sit back and say, you know, this doesn't make sense. This is not fair. Why are they doing that? It is an intentional design and attempt. So as long as we sit around like deers in the headlights saying, I can't believe this is happening, it's going to be happening. And they're going to turn it up more and more. They are accosting and mutilating and assaulting women and children right in front of our face, the same way they did on the plantation, right in front of everybody. And everybody just stands there and they say, oh, my God, this is terrible. You know, so we got to make a decision.
I heard that. And y'all brothers want to respond to her, to Jay?
I respond to her. She's exactly right. She's right. I mean, you can't no longer just sit back and say, well, look, man, I'm tired of this, and look what's going on, and why don't they stop doing this, and how come that? If we don't stop it, it ain't going to stop. I don't see it stopping. This has been going on forever, and it's not going to stop. And it's like she's saying, is from the time I was a kid until now, it didn't get better, it got worse.
Yeah.
And it's constantly getting worse. I mean, somebody had to stand up. We had to take a stand, man, and say enough is enough. And that's a fact. Otherwise, I mean, who else gonna stand up for us? Nobody.
You don't stand up for yourself.
I mean,
that's right.
All the killings and all the stuff that's happening, you see me, and they show it. I mean, there's no outcry. You only hear a few outcries from the black community, but I mean, the world community should be upset and shocked by it, but they're not.
Right. You know, there's
right.
Police, bro. Yeah. And what makes you say something about the world community, there's police brutality against African descendants all over the world.
That's
not
why
just
I say world
United States. Yeah. Not just in United States. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, there's police brutality going on in London, Germany, against black folks. So, I deal with this professor, I forgot his name, he made an analogy saying that the urban areas are number modern-day plantation and the police are the overseers.
Mm.
That's a fact.
Oh. That was his analogy.
Mm.
Yeah.
That would make the police feel the same police force that was developed back during the time of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, that's what they're
yeah.
doing for. Okay, well, they hadn't changed. That's one thing that hadn't changed.
Yeah.
They still riding the herd over all black folks, poor folks, mainly black folks, the slaves.
They're doing exactly what they were designed to do.
Right.
And they're still doing it.
Right.
As long as we allow them to do it, they're going to keep doing it. Because I don't see nobody anywhere, you know, standing up for us and saying, look, man, that's a shame what they're doing to those people, man. They ought to stop. We ought to do this or we ought to do that. No, you know, you
right.
don't need, man, come on. It'd be on the news for a little bit and then move on to something else.
Yeah,
y'all
ten,
remember, all right, Carlton, man. Good show,
we
man.
We got 10 seconds. Hey, little brothers, y'all want to continue this? We continue this another time. You know, I see we got a lot of callers in the day, a lot to talk about. I want to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host the show, the creator for allowing me to be, and you guys for calling in, and sister for calling in. I want you to stay tuned next week and tune into the show as often as you can, because your input is greatly valued. Okay?
All right.
I want everybody to know that. All the listening audience who can't reply, I want you to know we appreciate you calling. And until next week, thank you.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
We're off the air. Kenny, you still there?
Still here.
Rolo?
I'm still here.
Yeah. We all.
You can't hear me?
All right. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I hear you.
You can't hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh. All
right, I'll get back, man. All right, I'm about to come down that way, man. All right, later.
I'm home.
Oh, all right.
All right. Okay.
I can't even remember that. I remember that shit. Oh, we were 2007. That ain't too bad. This site designed by the New World Order. Let's see if they change anything. Another time.